Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset, your daily dose of news, politics, and culture. Imagine life in Chicago after COVID-19. I mean, some people think that we're already living it, but try thinking as far out as 2098.
As one variant followed another, year after year, the virus exhausted every system designed to stop it. The federal government collapsed. Supply lines broke. Networks that had taken generations to build, such as the internet, crumbled.
But there's more than just COVID in our future. There's also celebration, a golden age.
The annual New Year's Day celebration. Friends and chosen family. There will be joy in spite of everything.
What you've been hearing are clips from a new audio drama called Lake Song. It explores the successes and challenges that a pair of Southside siblings face after a shocking death shakes the city. Now, to learn more, we are joined by Jeremy McCarter, executive producer of Lake Song and the founder of Make Believe Association, and Laura Alcala Baker, co-creator, casting director, and line producer for Lake Song. Jeremy, first off, an audio drama? Why did audio make the most sense for this project as opposed to film?
Well, I don't need to tell you this. Audio is the most fun you can have in media.
I'm biased.
Obviously, right?
Tell them, not me.
Right. My background is in the theater, but I've always loved the old radio plays. And even when something's on stage, what I love the best about it is you get to engage your imagination. And since the podcast boom started, about 10 years ago, mm-hmm. it just feels like audio is the sandbox where you can have the most fun these days, particularly when you want to try something that is gigantic and ambitious. And Lake Song is certainly that.
Speaking of gigantic and ambitious, I'll give you the job, Laura, of explaining to us more about what the story is about.
Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you what. It's epic. We really went for gold there. It's the story of a future Chicago, one of radical imagination. You know, we really wanted to dream up what would be after, which may be a painful future before a promising one. And that meant a lot to the co-creators to imagine how something fruitful, something beautiful could come from all of this, that we could see a Republic of Chicago really reimagine itself through the people, through community, and through investment in that.
And you all cooked this up in like 2020, I hear.
Yeah.
It started in 2020, and the cooking has been going on ever since.
You're still in the kitchen.
We've been in the kitchen for 2.5 years now.
Wow.
It's very cozy.
Must be tired.
We still are. Yeah.
This is true. It started in no small part because of WBEZ. Natalie Moore and I had written an audio docudrama mm-hmm. that WBEZ aired in 2019 about the Chicago race riot a century earlier. And in 2020, Make Believe Association was all set to go with its 2020 season. And literally the night before the first rehearsal for their first project that was supposed to be directed by Laura, I recall,
yes.
we had to cancel it because that's the day, March 12th, 2020, when everything shut down. And for the next couple of months, we had to figure out what's the point of this company if it doesn't look like there's a way for us to make something. And then the whole world changed when people took to the streets that summer demanding justice.
Yeah.
So then what are we in the business of doing? And that summer is when WBEZ re-aired City on Fire, that docudrama from a century ago.
Yeah.
And it was a light bulb moment. I just realized, we actually know how to do this. We can respond to what the city is giving us. We just have to find a way to do it now that the world has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to find, we sometimes joke that the motto of Make Believe Association is, but is there a harder way to do it?
Because you seem to find the most complicated way to get there.
We are diligent about finding harder ways to do it, but we just feel like we're a nonprofit. Every dime that has gone into everything that we've done has been donated by a foundation or an individual. And I think the implicit reason they do it is because they want to see us taking big swings.
Yeah. Well, you know, for centuries, Lake Michigan, right? It's been Chicago's link to the wider world. Mm-hmm. I also come from a city that is connected to a great lake, too. I'm talking about Toronto and Lake Ontario, of course. But since moving here, I feel like it's different, mm-hmm. right? Talk more, Jeremy, about this city's relationship with the lake.
Sure. I mean, there are the big, that sort of headline moments that we all love to tell our friends about when they come to visit, about how, you know, we had to turn the river around to protect the lake. For us, you know, I live in Edgewater. It's right there. It's always there, sort of on the edge of everyone's consciousness. But for us, it felt like the lake is so vast and so present, it can become a metaphor for something, because we all have a relationship to it. And yeah. The specific way that we decided to use the lake back in the summer of 2020, you might recall, it rained a whole lot and the lake got really high. And there were these climate models that showed that might be the new norm. By the end of the century, I mean, no one's entirely sure, but one model says that as the rest of the world is going to keep getting drier and drier, Lake Michigan might get higher and higher because it might get warmer and wetter here.
Yeah.
So we put those two things together, and that gave us the backdrop for our series, where as we imagine the 2090s, for a number of reasons.
Sounds so weird hearing you say that, the 2090s.
Yeah, but 2.5 years, it still sounds weird to me too.
Yeah.
But what we decided is that the lake would get so high and life in Chicago would get so exciting for various reasons that the Independent Republic of Chicago is actually more like Venice than it is like the current day Chicago, where it becomes a city of canals. The city has found a different way to coexist with this gigantic body of fresh water, and people are getting around on their boats.
Very interesting. Laura, the story follows two siblings, as I mentioned, in the south side of this Republic of Chicago. Why'd you choose to set the story on the south side?
I mean, that in so many ways is the heart of Chicago, right? We've had a great migration. We have many great migrations, many intersections living on the south side, on the west sides, pushed out away from the lake, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And so centering those communities, those people felt the most important in what we were doing. We've been working with an intersectional co-creator cohort and cast, for that matter, just such a wealth of talent coming from Chicago. You know, and that meant that connection was really strong, and we knew no other way to be.
So we've got an all Chicago cast here.
You betcha.
Which right. makes perfect sense.
Which, although it's funny, it doesn't happen as often as you think. There are plenty of productions that, even though they're set here and they're about here, are flying folks in from the coast. And I actually give Laura a lot of credit for that. Laura was the casting director for the project, and she had the challenge of finding these beautiful humans who tell this story.
How'd you go about it, Laura?
Oh, man, I've been connected to the theater community for about 10 years now, and there is a continuous sort of migration of talent coming to this city because this is where stuff is born. That's why I came here. I came here to tell stories of a new canon where stuff is born, and I find that over and over again we're creating those new stories to create that new canon, and people want to be a part of that. So this talent, whether they're born here or whether they come here, they're seeking something in those Chicago stories. And geez, I mean, I just come across them constantly. We've got Sydney Charles. We've got Marcus Moore. We've got, oh my gosh, Lillian, this young woman who's just starting out in her career, got her break in
what
some ways.
What a great project to start with.
I'll say. I mean, we feel very blessed. She was 9 years old when she recorded. And she told us after she had crushed it and done beautiful work that she'd never done this before. She'd never been in a studio, never done a voiceover gig. And now she's on the road in a touring company of a Broadway musical. Yeah. So we're very proud of the fact that we can say that we helped her get her start.
So in that clip that we played earlier in the intro, the narrator mentioned friends and chosen family. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how that sentiment is felt throughout the drama?
Yeah. I mean, so often we find ourselves in chosen family because it is the space where we get to be ourselves, where we get to be surrounded by the people who make our best and fullest selves. And that's what we find here, that, you know, we may say that blood is thicker than water, but not in this case, right? Water is everywhere in this play and in Chicago. And it's important to recognize that we find ourselves in others and we see that in one another. We trust through that. And that's what we hope to do by including chosen family.
We mentioned some of the newbies when we talked about the casting. But, I mean, did everyone in general have experience working with audio?
I think it was probably new to a few people, but then we had some folks who had more experience probably in front of microphones than the rest of us combined.
Yeah.
In a project during season one, we had the great opportunity to work with Billy Branch, Chicago blues legend, recently inducted to the Blues Hall of Fame, who it turned out had been wanting to act for decades. And we love the guy. And as we were brainstorming on these Zoom calls starting in July of 2020, well, what's the future of Chicago? What's it going to look like? What will people do? What will it sound like?
Yeah.
We just realized, well, Chicago is going to sound like Chicago. It may be 70 or 80 years from now, but the blues is still going to be this sort of the spine of the musical life of the city. And then, you know, one thing leads to another. And like, well, we're just going to write Billy into this then. So we created a character for Billy Branch to play. And so now if you listen to Lake Song, you get him acting with his 22 cast mates, and then you occasionally get him playing, wow. You know, at no extra charge.
Well, we joked earlier about the cooks in the kitchen reference, right? Did it ever feel like too many cooks in the kitchen, Laura? Like, why did you want the actors to be involved in the process in this way?
Because they're the experts on the character. Every time, whatever we put to the page, whatever words we have those characters say, they elevate that every single time. And it seems like a great disservice to the talent, to these people who have such an understanding of the human condition, to leave them out of that conversation because they have so much to offer to the narrative through their character's perspective. So we're internally grateful to them for that.
Yeah. Like every single contribution that came in was welcome because it either we used it or it helped us get to the next one.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that and that's from the genesis of the project was not, you know, here's the story we're going to tell. The genesis of the project was our city has just changed. We know that we can make this if we work together. Now let's figure out what the story ought to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we mentioned, this is taking place well into the future. But for some reason, when I was listening to it, I couldn't help but hear glimpses of the past, like the distant past. I was hearing it in some of the music, the styles of singing even, some of the audio clips that you used within the audio drama. Was that intentional or am I just nuts?
No, it's 100% intentional. I mean, look, all science fiction is about...
I was like, is this 2098 or 1898?
But 2098 will be 1898 in some respects, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the history isn't a light switch. 2098 will have the legacy of 2020 and 1919 and 1898. And part of what the dreaming that we had to do together is not just, okay, all of us in the summer of 2020 are going to imagine life in 2098. To get there, we had to write a future history for the city that has, as the clip showed, some tough moments coming, we figure. But before that, you know, the impulse to go to the future came from Natalie Moore and came from Sydney Charles, who, when I pitched them this idea in the summer of 2020, instantly had identical reactions. They both said, yes, we should get together and try to dream up a story, and we should set it in the future. Because if we set it in the future, then we could give people a sense of hope. And so as we're dreaming this future where, you know, there are challenges and everything else, we also chart a way that the activism, the energy of people trying to make this city better right now in the 2020s, that works.
Yeah.
By the 2040s, by the 2050s, this city has a golden age in the future history that we've written for it. So part of what happens in 2098 is you have the elders in the community trying to remind everybody we can look out for each other.
Yeah.
Like, we have done this.
I love that.
It's in our history.
Was it cathartic to write about a post COVID-59, you know, while living in COVID-19?
It was... The process of writing was intensely cathartic. So we had the seven of us, the seven co-creators, Laura and I were two of them, Natalie, Sydney, Christina Vallada-Vyers, Nate Marshall, and the freshly minted Tony Award-winning sound designer, Mikhail Fixel. The seven of us dreamed up the story together, starting in the summer of 2020, and then five of us went away to write it in most of 2021. And now that it's done, you know, it's always, you say, you know, the production, you're just looking at what's 3 weeks ahead.
Yeah.
Now that it's done and it was accepted by the Tribeca Festival, it was, you know, it's gotten all this wonderful acclaim. And now looking back on it, that was our pandemic. I mean, the Lake Song is the sound of seven people and our artistic comrades surviving a plague together.
That's amazing. So we've got five episodes already released. How many left?
What are we at? 12?
Yeah, right.
12 in total.
So, 12 in total.
Do the math.
Yeah,
I'm a journalist, not a mathematician.
There's been so many iterations.
A lot left, folks.
Yeah. There's been so many iterations and expansions and contractions, and that's kind of the magic of building, you know, new narratives is that you got to let it be what it's going to be, and it teaches you along the way.
Right.
So we've had a lot of experimentation.
Well,
and
it's good stuff.
Misha Fixel has been a huge component in creating that world, that sonic world. Thank you.
This episode of Reset was produced by Micah Yasin, and it was edited by Ethan Schwab. Have you subscribed to our podcast yet? If not, then hello. What are you waiting for? We've got so many great conversations just like this for you to dive into and share new ones every day of the week. And when you subscribe, leave us a rating because that helps more listeners find us. That's all for Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll chat with you on Monday.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.